Well, well, well. We have a Liberal Party convention in Montreal. The tone of my voice should reflect the excitement on the street, as I was just telling Jim Duff. I've been in three taxis today, and the only thing the taxi drivers say, and that is the height of wisdom, believe me, Montreal, what do we care? All they're going to do is make something else illegal. All they're going to do is make something else controlled. Nobody's telling us what they're standing for. The question comes up, given the nature of the candidates particularly, how relevant is a political party today, in particular the Liberal Party? And no, not because of ad scam. The man they're honoring right now at 7 o'clock, former Prime Minister Martin, created the Gomery Inquiry to avoid all the attention on him for $1.5 billion guarantees to companies to buy planes from other companies whose lobbyist was his national campaign co-chairman, moving $300 million of taxes offshore so that his companies could benefit as finance minister. No, there's enough cynicism about this guy. The problem is the candidates themselves. What do they stand for? Everybody's a one-issue candidate. Stéphane Dion, who showed some candor and some courage on the clarity question, has become an environmental idealist. Well, environment is important, but no less or more important than any other issue that's a basic role of government. Health, transport, you got to keep the air clean, you got to keep the water clean. That's not a national vision, and that's not a rationale for a party. Jerry Kennedy was the Minister of Education in Ontario, who passed so much datacratic laws that it's almost a criminal offense in Ontario for parents whose kids leave high school before 18. That's how much responsibility and intervention the state is dumping into everybody's lives. Michael Ignatieff, what can one say? This is a man who is not the man who wrote the books. We've seen the kind of war crimes flip-flop. We've seen him reopen the whole nation question. And Bob Rae? Well, here's a socialist now backed by some of the most important corporate leaders in the country. And this is Duck and Bob Rae. Bob and Weave, he won't stick to it, an answer to a question. He won't give one. So all these guys have, like, one slice niche issues, sort of like a hook that you hang your coat on when you come into a cloakroom. Well, if that's the case, maybe there's no rationale for political parties. If the natural governing party, as liberals like to think of themselves, really doesn't mean anything to this country anymore, maybe what we need is a system where people can coalesce around issues. So, for example, in Israel, where there is a list system where the percentage of the popular vote determines how many seats you get in the House, there have been parties created for example, senior citizens. 28% of the population are senior citizens. They got 7 seats. If you want an issue, why don't you stand up and make a party around the issue instead of going into an organization and an infrastructure that's sclerotic? That's at best, it's sclerotic. At worst, it's against the great interest of the common well. It doesn't do the greatest good for the greatest number. But that's the game in town today, and we're going to do a little tour d'horizon of it with some of the leading analysts and journalists in the country. We're going to be talking with Ray Hurd, former director of news for Can West and former editor of the Montreal Star. Excuse me, Warren Kinsella, media columnist for the National Post, and later on the hour, Angela Persichelli, one of the sharpest and toughest political minds in this country, who really calls it as he sees them. So we'll be right back and get underway. All right, and we're talking about the Liberal Convention, but more than that, it's not just about gossip. We've got some of the best minds in the country coming on today, some of the best newspaper men, analysts, journalists. Question is, do political parties have a relevance? Do they matter to you? We want to hear from you. We've got a major convention going on, with every major candidate having a niche issue. This guy's Mr. Green. This guy's Mr. Control Freak, Statocratic Laws, I'm in your underwear. The other guy wants to reopen a nation debate. The fourth guy doesn't want to say anything about anything. Do they have any relevance? Aren't you mad at this? Haven't you had enough? Maybe we should have political parties that coalesce around ideas, sort of a European list system. You have an idea? You have a position? You get a percentage of the vote? You get seats in Parliament. Otherwise, you've got a bunch of puppets running around. Does anybody care out there? Montreal, I want to hear from you. I want to hear if it really matters to you. Are you impressed by any of this nonsense that's going on? And do political
parties themselves as a structure say anything to us. And that's what we're going to be discussing tonight. And our first guest, we've had a technical glitch with, so we're going to continue. But we're going to be dealing with this issue from several standpoints, from the media standpoint, from the standpoint of how journalists in the trenches have looked at this. We're going to be joined by Ray Hurd, former news director for Can West. We're going to be joined by Warren Kinsella, media columnist for the National Post. And we're going to have Angela Persichelli at the last part of the hour, who's one of the toughest journalists and really calls them as he sees them on this issue. Two of them are on the floor of the convention. We're going to have some gossip from the floor. And more than anything, though, what does this matter? How does this matter to you? But first of all, the lines have lit up all of a sudden. We lost a guest, but we got callers. That's even more important. Ann, good evening.
Hi, good evening, Beryl. I'm really disillusioned and disenchanted with with politics altogether. I don't understand where this Michael Ignatieff, where is he coming from? He hasn't been living here for 30 years. And then he comes and makes a statement about a nation, and that's going to have a ripple effect, right?
Right.
And like you said, some wear a green hat, some have nothing to say. I mean, what kind of...
Do the parties matter to you? Do you care if somebody's a liberal or anything else, or do you care about the issues? And if you care about the issues, aren't these guys running on the issues? Why don't they set up their own list?
I don't think they know what they're running on, half of them, honestly. I just don't know. I used to care about parties, but I don't get the feeling that anybody has a grasp or a platform, a solid platform, and they don't really know who they are. They're just, like you said, a bunch of puppets.
And more than puppets.
You know?
If they're working within a structure, if they're working within a party structure,
yes.
they're operated by somebody, and they go out to the people and they say, okay, well, vote for us, and then they put in laws that do nothing but regulate our lives. They don't make them better. They don't make them expanded. It's sort of what Ronald Reagan used to say about the problem with government. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, they regulate it, and if it stops moving, they subsidize it, and we can't breathe anymore.
Well, that's the point I was going to make. You know, as I become older and wiser, I see that there, everywhere you turn, there's so much government in our face, in our lives, that, I mean, this is a democracy, right?
Right. Theoretically, it's a quasi-democracy. People don't understand that in Canada, by order and council, the prime minister has almost total power. He can say that all people who are, I don't know, 5'3" and have red hair have to live in Ungava. It wouldn't be just, but it'll probably be legal.
Right.
Because what was attempted to be done with the Charter of Rights and Freedoms to change Canada from a parliamentary democracy to a constitutional one required a diffusion of rights to the people. And it hasn't happened.
Right.
It sits with the Prime Minister.
And I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think so. But anyway.
Never say you don't think so, Anne. That's why we do the work we do at the Institute and with the magazine and on the radio and the political organization. This isn't that big a country. We can make positive, redemptive change. And I think people are waking up. I think they're seeing that the organized political structures have nothing to say to us anymore. You want to talk to us about issues? Talk to us about issues. Have the guts to organize your people across the country. It can't be worse in a list system with coalition governments being a necessity than it is these days. And thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
Henry, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Good, you?
I'm very good, thanks. Actually, what I wanted to say, it's really simple. I think we're all a little bit naive, and we're actually not voting.
Henry, can you just talk a little closer to your mic, to your phone, because you're getting an echo?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay.
I think that people aren't voting for who they want to come into office, but they're actually just voting because they don't want a certain candidate or whatever in office.
Right, so they vote against something, not for something.
Exactly. I mean, you can look at all the issues, you can look at all the people, and most of it just doesn't make sense. Most of it, if you think about it, it's all just a crock.
You know, I let out the show. I was talking to Jim Duff, and I was in three taxis today, and every taxi driver said the same thing, that nobody cares, because the only thing people in government these days have on their minds is not really attacking the major problems like health care or your transport crisis or anything of substance that government has to do. They want to regulate. They want to make negative law just to put in the flyers for the next election. So if they don't have something positive to tell us, what's the point?
Well, that's just it. I feel that they are talking positively about certain issues, but the thing is that they seem to only be targeting certain people. So one candidate will track, say, Dion, which is going to track for the environmentalists, so that's not a problem. He's got them.
Henry, hold on to your thought, because I want to make a suggestion with you and explore something with you, but we've got to pay some bills and take a break right here.
Not a problem.
Right. And we're talking about the Liberal Convention, whether the Liberal Party has anything to say to the country, indeed whether any party has anything to say to the country, since when you look at the candidates for the leadership, they've got their little niche issue. They have a niche issue. Why don't they go and organize candidates for themselves, and why don't we change our system to allow a list system, for that matter? Nobody seems to have a vision. And one of the people in this country who calls it as straight as they come is Warren Kinsella, media columnist for the National Post. But also, I want to draw your attention to warrenkinsella.com, his website, where you want straight talk, you go there. Warren, good evening. Thanks for taking the time out.
How are you, my friend?
Okay. You know, we're talking about the relevance of political parties. The title in your column today said it all. Are you sick of the N-word? Yeah, me too. Nation. So we got Mr. Ignatieff, who reopens the Ignatian debate. Mr. Dion, who's an environmental idealist. We've got Jerry Kennedy, Mr. Statocratic Engineer, who in Ontario, of course, made parents responsible for their kids not leaving school till they're 18, almost criminally responsible. Then there's, of course, Bob and Weave Ray, who won't take a position anything. Do they have anything to say to this country? And can anything be said within the context of a political party?
You know what? I like to give the Liberal Party credit, and it actually isn't something they planned. I don't know what's going to happen on Saturday or Sunday, you know, whenever the final vote is done. And neither does anybody else. Or if they do say they know what's going to happen, they're lying. So that's actually kind of fun. It's kind of exciting. The last, few Liberal leadership conventions, unlike the Tory one,
right,
it's been kind of preordained as to who was going to win. You know, it was pretty self-evident. So when that happens, you lose media attention. You lose that kind of sizzle and the excitement. So the one thing that they deserve no credit for, but they're going to benefit from, is the fact that it's kind of exciting and unexpected. So that's kind of neat.
That's the public face of it, and that's, as for a journalist covering it, that's fun. But does the party have anything to say to this country?
Not yet. And, you know, this is the bizarre thing about having a policy convention simultaneous with a leadership convention. That's how this nation mistake was made, is they would not have had the opportunity, the Ignatieff people, to do that nation thing. And, you know, people can debate as to whether that was a good idea or not. But, you know, he wouldn't have been able to do that but for the Liberal Party deciding, you know, to have the policy thing and the leadership thing at the same time. That was
right. Dumb.
They should not have done that. Generally, what you do is you elect your leader, and whoever he or she is, they kind of get to be leader, and they get to say, well, here are the things that I believe in. And then the party comes back and says, oh, what a coincidence. We all believe in the same things. And then, you know, you don't have any kind of disagreements about the fundamentals. And that's the problem here, is they're going to have resolutions coming out of this convention. Nobody's paying any attention to. I've talked to reporters over there this afternoon. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there, Warren. You just speak a little closer.
Sorry, I thought you cut out there.
No.
And one of the, Ken Rockburn from CPAC, told me he was at a thing and it was like 35 people in a big wig, big deal policy thing. So, that's dangerous.
Well, we have had full slates of 14 delegates elected by three voters in some ridings in Quebec. So this is that would be par for the course. I was talking earlier, the wisdom of the street, vox populi. I was in three cabs today, and each cab driver said, what's the difference who gets elected? The Liberals are just going to pass laws that are going to deny me something that I already have now. The old Reagan line, if it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. Is that the mindset of this party?
Well, at the moment it is, and it is a mistake because, you know, what they're doing is reacting to Harper, and they're, you know, if Harper says, I'm not going to spend so much, they're saying, well, we're going to spend more. And, you know, it is understandable. An opposition party does have to oppose. That is the job of Her Majesty's loyal opposition.
And that is to a certain extent. But didn't you find that when Harper was in opposition, he proposed as much as he opposed, and at least he didn't oppose with such bloody false piety every single day? And with Graham as opposition leader, it's been oppose, 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 oppose.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
right. We've come very far. You know, you and I are both fans of Bobby Kennedy, but we've come pretty far from the days when I think both of us remember when Kennedy announced for the presidential nomination. He said, I run not merely to oppose any man, but to propose new policies. That's been a long time coming for the Liberal Party.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. That if you get an oppositional mentality too much, people go, hey, they're really good at opposition. I don't think I want to trust them insofar as being a government, right? Although that's the paradox for Harper as well. You know, he actually has done a very good job of a minority government.
Yep.
His objective in doing that was to, I think, persuade people he could be trusted with a majority. But this is where the paradox kicks in. They've actually, a lot of Canadians are saying, well, actually, this minority government stuff works out kind of well.
Kind of well.
I like it.
Yeah.
We're going to give him another one.
It's almost like
he's looking at it right
It's
now.
Almost like forced coalitions in a list system. Warren, right. I hear the activity in the background. I really thank you for taking time out. I know you had a long trip in, and you're on the floor of the convention and in the side rooms and the back rooms, and enjoy yourself. That
thank
you'll
very
do.
Much.
Thanks
you,
a lot,
friend.
Warren. We'll be right back with some more of our callers. Henry's been patiently waiting, and some more of our guests right after this. And we're back, and we're discussing whether the Liberal Party, or for that matter, any party, do they have anything to say to Canadians anymore? It seems that parties oppose for the sake of opposing instead of proposing. The Liberals, in particular, have saved themselves a lot of trouble having a policy convention at the same time as the leadership convention. So we've got these niche issues as opposed to having anybody really come out with a platform. And what do they stand for? And take a look at that broad question of what does the Liberal Party have to say to the country. We've got a very special guest, a good friend of ours, Adam Daifala, former member of the editorial board of the National Post, a co-author of Rescuing Canada's Right. Adam, welcome.
Hi, Beryl. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Great. Thank you.
Jerry Kennedy, Mr. Statocratic Engineer from Ontario. What else we got? We got Stephane Dion, who showed some clarity and candor with the Clarity Act. Now an environmental idealist. Nothing wrong with the environment, but it seems to me it's just a basic housekeeping thing that a government has to do. You got to keep the water clean. You got to keep the air clean. We got Michael Ignatieff, who I'm not quite sure, you know, even more than reopening the national question, which is a little bit of an irritant. This is Mr. Collective Rights, Human Rights for Everybody. A descent into tribalism, but that's his main thing. But he keeps flip-flopping, so we're not sure where he is. And then there's old Bob and, you know, Duck and Weave, Bob and Weave Ray, who's been, what, a Maoist? He was a member of some weird party with a weird name I don't remember, then the NDP. And now he's running for the Liberal leadership, backed by the biggest elements of big business. And all of them have no general platform. Does this party have anything to say to anything, or are they just opposing for the sake of opposing?
Yeah, I think that what you said is pretty much bang on. It's never been an ideological party, of course. The Liberals have always been...
Well, yet liberalism was.
Of course, but the Liberal Party, especially since the 1960s, has been probably the premier brokerage political party in the Western world.
Adam, I'm sorry. I want to open up a parenthèse here. Because we did this last night with John Ibbotson, and John was warning about the Liberal Party going away, the Liberal Party of Great Britain, because it didn't really know what it stood for. I went further back than you, and with all due respect, I know you're a great historian, but I timed it from Mackenzie King, because at least from the time of Alexander Mackenzie through the Laurier era, the Liberal Party was the party that did not stand for big government, that stood for self-reliance, that stood for non-interference in people's lives. And then from the time of Mackenzie King, with the Trudeau interval in only the sense that Trudeau did stand for individual consequence over state consequence, but put in a lot of state laws that really wrecked things, a lot of things, the Liberal Party has really been tried to be the party to everybody, so you scream loud enough, you get a check.
Well, that's, yeah, I would generally agree with that. I think the timeline is debatable. I think you could probably put forward a pretty solid case that Louis Saint Laurent's government, and in particular C.D. Howe, the finance minister for many years, was a principled, low tax, small government. But we can debate this till we're blue in the face. The point is that the current leadership candidates have not put forward inspiring type leadership platforms, and the one that I think has been the most disappointing in all this has been Bob Rae. Bob Rae has not put forward a single idea, and he and his people have been fairly open about this. That was on purpose. He specifically did not want to run on anything, and in all the interviews that I've seen him give, he's essentially just said that he is not going to be Stephen Harper and that he's opposed to this ideological.
But he hasn't.
He hasn't
quite told us what's wrong with Stephen Harper, other than the fact that Bob Rae is kind of wishy-washy on foreign policy, and maybe like Jack Layton would like to talk to the Taliban and want to know whether they'll shoot him as a socialist or cut his throat for being pro-trade union. I'm not sure.
Where this came home for me, I just want to add this in, Beryl. I saw Ralph Goodale's press conference.
My God.
Where he endorsed Bob Rae, and I just took note of some of the terms he used to describe Harper. He didn't talk about Bob Rae for more than 10 seconds, but he called Harper, and I'll just list off some of the things he said: neoconservative damage to the fabric of Canada, the Harper regime, which is, of course, in the derogatory sense.
The code word, of course.
The most rigidly
ideological... The liberals don't have regimes, right? They have open government.
The most rigidly ideological government in Canadian history, narrow and extreme-based...
Thank God they have an ideology.
...mean and vindictive and Republican in its values. So that's essentially been the Bob Rae campaign, is to attack Harper, and he's proposed nothing that he would do himself if he were elected.
Adam, stay with us. We just got to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Bye-bye. No... And we're talking about the relevance of political parties. Does this Liberal Party convention mean anything to you? Can political parties change? And perhaps do we have to adapt them? And our very special guest right now is Adam Difallo, former editorial board member of the National Post and co-author of Rescuing Canada's Right. Adam, we were talking before the break about the liberal language about the Conservative government in Goodale's endorsement of Rae, that the Conservatives were a regime, neoconservative, smacked of republicanism. Not that, by the way, I would mind a Canadian republic, but that's another story. But then the Liberals are good at drive-by character assassinations, and of course I've been known to give them as good as they dish out. But is there a case to be made when you're looking at a convention like this with niche issues and niche candidates and guys that are doing a leadership convention at the same time there's a policy convention, is there an argument to be made that, hey, you know, the Canadian system, even though Stephen Harper, when he was in opposition, proposed as much as he opposed, and he really raised the level of civil discourse, Bill Graham and the Liberals just oppose. Is there something to be said for making the system a list system? Okay, you guys have a niche issue? Like the Green Party. Go, get your votes. Every government will have to be a coalition government, and every interest group and issue will be represented by seats. Is there a reason anymore to have set political parties?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Though we saw a program from Stephen Harper, but that's because Stephen Harper had policy from the first day he walked into politics.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, Tories or Liberals, we've got candidates not running on a policy platform.
Yeah, well, and that's always something that I've hoped would change, and I think it is changing a little bit with Harper, and there's some examples of provincial governments lately. I would cite Harris in Ontario as an example of someone who ran on a really clear set of ideas and then actually implemented them when he was in office. When it boils down to it, though, Beryl, I know you and I disagree on this. I actually prefer the traditional system. I think that Canada works best when it has two big national parties.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree, Adam, but I think at least that, therefore, if we're going to stick with that, I have no problem with Canada turning to a republic where the votes of the people are going to count and MPs are going to be responsible to the people who elected them, not strictly to their leaders.
Right. Well, couldn't you argue that they are now? I mean,
no, they're not. because you get elected as an MP. Take a look what happened to Erwin Kotler in terms of his cabinet solidarity. Take a look what happened to Michael Ignatieff. I mean, everybody becomes, these are not the people of the books that they wrote. These become the followers of the leader because all power is vested in the leader. That's our system.
Well, I think that might say something about the personal integrity of those people that you mentioned, because we could contrast someone like Erwin Kotler with someone like Michael Chong, when he did oppose something and couldn't look at himself in the mirror if he had gone with it, he actually did resign.
No question, and I must say one thing, but here again, it depends on the leader of the party to be responsive. I found that I've had disagreements with this government, the disagreements have been civil. I've talked to elected officials, I've talked to senators, and I said, you know, I can't go along with this, and I'll be writing an article, for example, about it. And they'll say, well, okay, fine, we'll agree to disagree on this. Under the liberals, they say, you're going to disagree with us on this? That's it.
Well,
you know, you get no access. But that's because of what Stephen Harper has done to the Conservative Party. But under another leader, it could swing back.
I would disagree. I think that is a different subject from the original question you asked.
That is.
Do the party system work? I think that there is a fundamental difference in the mentalities of activists in both parties. The Conservative Party, having been previously involved in it in another life,
right.
I can tell you, is a collection of individuals.
Oh, Adam, your life is just one big cycle. You'll be back.
The Conservative Party is really just a collection of individuals who are independent thinkers, who are mainly ideas-first people.
And that's very important. I went through.
The Liberal Party is much more of a tribal party. No, I'm not saying this derisively. It's just two different types.
No, and more than that, as I discussed with John Ibsen last night, is not the Conservative Party of Canada becoming the party of true industrial liberalism in the classic sense, while the big L Liberal Party is becoming the party of big vested interests and has been for a long time?
I don't think it's becoming that. I think it's been that way.
It's been that way.
Time now. I mean, you just have to look at the fundraising totals and put them beside each other, from the Tories and the Liberals, and look who got money from the corporations and who didn't. This is all in our book, by the way, Rescuing Canada's Right.
And it's like a 3-1 differential in the number of contributors to the Tories versus the number of contributors to the Liberals, and the Tories did better in total dollars being populist collectors of funds.
That's
Adam,
right.
Would you have patience for, I just want to leave pressure on the lines for a little bit, stay with me while we take CJ. CJ, sure. Good evening.
Yeah, good evening, how are you?
Okay, you?
I'm very well. I think, Beryl, you hit it on the head when you said that the Liberal Party is a party who would say to you, you know, if you scream loud enough, here's your check. And I think that's been the problem with this party for the longest time, in the sense that it has lived off interest groups. And that is very wrong for a nation. When you only cater to interest groups, you forget the bulk of the population. And that's what the Liberal Party has done, and has managed to get away with it for the longest time.
You're quite right, and the reason they managed to get away with it is because at the same time that they give to corporate interest, rolling up huge subventions to corporations that are rarely repaid, that total almost a third of our budget, they balance that off with these checks to every group that screams and yells for any insane reason just to buy a vote, and they think that one will just bamboozle the other. But I think Canadians may be finally getting it.
Canadians have got it, because I was making a comment just before the elections, and I said something to the effect that, you know, the Canadian people are patient people, very kind people, but at the end of the day, they're not a stupid people. They won't put a government back in power that has basically robbed them for the last number of years. And this is what they did. They threw them out. And thank God we actually have a government that does just that. It governs. It doesn't, you know, cater just to interest groups.
Right.
It actually governs.
It governs, and the Prime Minister takes a stand. He says, take me as I am, and this is what I'll be judged on. CJ, thank you very much. We'll be right back with Adam DeFallo, and we'll be joined by Ray Hurd. And we're wrapping up an hour where we're asking, does this convention really count? Does the Liberal Party have anything to say to the Canadian people, or is it just more of the same, a bunch of niche issue candidates, but basically with an overall philosophy that if it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. And above all, make everything illegal. And we've been privileged to have Adam DeFallo with us, who's still with us, the co-author of Rescuing Canada's Right, former member of the editorial board of the National Post. And finally, we've got Ray Hurd. We have technical difficulties. Ray, I'm sorry at the beginning of the hour. How are you?
Great. I am at the convention. I've covered them all since Pearson. And this one.
And you know this city and this country. Former editor for the Montreal Star, director of news for Can West.
It seems to me that basically it's a bunch of journalists interviewing other journalists here. Nothing substantive has happened.
Ray, they have nothing to say.
Journalists have increasingly big egos. I am on a reverse ego trip, however.
A reverse ego trip, you
said.
Wait a minute. I want you to explain that.
Well, it just
Difala and I don't understand that.
Hi, Ray.
Ray, we've got Adam Difala with us.
On a somewhat serious note, the guy to watch here is, guess who?
You're going to tell me Ray or Dion?
Kennedy. He's the guy to watch.
God help us.
Kennedy is the right generation. All the Trudeau old guard, Jim Coutts, Axworthy, Grafstein, they've gone to him. They're ex officio. They have votes. He's doing well because he is against Quebec as a nation. That's a calculated
risk. Oh, yeah, as of 3 days ago.
Well, it's a big risk he's taken, but that's what they're talking about. And most people I've spoken to think it'll be Dion or him because Ignatieff and Ray, who will do best in the early vote, don't have sufficient room to grow.
To wiggle room. Adam, you had something you wanted?
Yeah, Ray, it's Adam Difala.
Yeah.
I think that there's one significant thing that happened today, which is that the Liberal delegates voted down the proposal to move to a one-member, one-vote leadership selection system, which was being pushed by Belinda Stronach. And I think this is a great victory because I personally like the big delegated conventions like they're having now.
Yes, and it's going to be exciting, no doubt about that, on Saturday. It's going to be close. Even journalists like Hugh Windsor, who've been covering this country, you know, since 1950-something, they're not taking bets on it. They just don't know. I've got this instinctive feeling that Kennedy will surprise people. His problem, frankly, is his lack of French, even though he has a francophone wife. So the bottom line to me is a very exciting night, Saturday. It's going to drag on, I think. Don't underrate Mr. Kennedy, the dark horse. Don't underrate Stéphane Dion. They could make a deal together.
But let me ask both of you, but Ray, let me aim it at you. If Jerry Kennedy wins this convention, this Jerry is the man who comes from a mindset and a political set that includes people like Jim Watson that have passed law after law in Ontario, interfering in every aspect of personal life. If that's going to be...
Bob Ray did that, too.
Absolutely. So if it's Ray or... And what I find interesting is what you said, that Kennedy's getting Jim Coutts, he's getting Grafstein, he's getting all the old guard, and Ray, the former Maoist something else, and then NDPer, has got John Ray and the Desmarais machine behind him.
Sure.
So we've got major vested interests, major corporate power, Bay Street backing more statocratic government. You know, I've been saying the story all day. I was in three taxis today. I had a whole bunch of meetings. And every taxi driver said to me, say something about the fact that we're tired of government passing laws that have nothing to do with our real lives and are just saying what we can't do.
Well, you know this, guys? Kennedy's in favor of bank mergers.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for pragmatic?
Kennedy's also made parents almost criminally responsible if their kids leave high school before they're 18. What the hell is that state's business?
Basically,
and his buddy Jim Watson says little Johnny can't drive his bike around the suburban subdivision without a helmet or you get hit with a $200 fine.
It's called the nanny state, right, Adam?
It is. And, Ray, I think you're pretty much right about Kennedy and this surge. I sort of sense it, too. And I think that what's really happening here is that the convention is coming down to a referendum on the continuation or not of Trudeauvian federalism and this nation resolution.
And don't underrate the power of Justin Trudeau, who's never done anything. I guess he once tied up his shoelaces.
But, Ray, been heard.
There we are. That's the reality.
Gentlemen, I'm a pessimist to start with. I'm an angry fighter and continue to fight. But,
I know you have to go, Bill, but let me say this. The three guys who could have done it, Frank McKenna could have won this thing.
Yep.
He's got a brain. Brian Tobin is mature now. He's an even nicer person. And John Manley is boring as bat dung, but he does have a brain, too. They're not running. So it's a by-default process.
Well, gentlemen, if it's a by-default process and we get a Kennedy or a Ray and more statocratic nonsense instead of addressing the real issues that affect people's lives, I want to leave both of you and I want to leave our listeners across the country with the following small paragraph that was written by the great playwright Ben Hecht. In our own time, governments have taken the place of people. They have also taken the place of God. Governments speak for people, dream for them, determine absurdly their lives and deaths. This new worship of government is one of the subjects we will never accept. It is a worship we must lack. We should have no reverence for the all-powerful and bewildered face of government. I see it as a lessening of the human being, a final looting of his birthright. I see it as an ogre with despair in its eyes. And if that's going to be the face of the new Liberal Party, we need George Orwell to redefine
great
what Canada
quote,
is.
Beryl, but I've got a better one.
Go ahead.
I am a member of no organized political party. I am a liberal.
Love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal, Phil Oakes sang in the 60s, right?
That's
Adam Dyfala, Raymond Hurd, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nick Mays and Master Control, thanks very much. We'll be back Monday night.